Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hills, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The nation's Highway Trust Fund is running out of funds this summer, going broke. It's the federal fund that backs up road and bridge repairs in all 50 states. It's funded by a federal gas tax that hasn't been raised since 1993. It's not keeping up. So how do we refill the kitty? A higher gas tax, tax the cash from the ailing post office, throw a big business a tax holiday, leave it to all the states. Nobody's agreeing, and the roads are crumbling. This hour on Point, American highway infrastructure running on empty. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. How do the roads look in your neck of the woods? Is this the time to be shutting down road and bridge repair? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. By July, a lot of construction will be shutting down without new funds. Last month, here was Transportation Secretary Anthony Fox saying something's got to be done or the Highway Trust Fund would start bouncing checks.
All of these types of projects may be delayed or shut down completely, which means freight won't move, which means trade will slow, which means businesses won't hire. And by the way, your morning commute will be longer because the roads you're driving on will crumble and no one will show up to fix them.
There are all kinds of proposals for what to do out there, but agreement on none. With us first today from Eugene, Oregon, is Congressman Peter DeFazio, Democrat, represents Oregon's 4th District. He introduced a bill last week that would fund the Highway Trust Fund by replacing the federal gas tax with a per-barrel tax on oil and oil companies. Congressman DeFazio, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate the opportunity.
Why not just, I mean, there's many things that are on the table here. Republicans, the most recent thing John Boehner's talking about is shutting down Saturday delivery of the U.S. mail and taking that money for a temporary fix for road repair. What about that?
That's nuts. First off, if you go to five-day delivery, you'll put the post office in a death spiral. You won't save any money. And they're projecting over 10 years that might save $10 billion, and they would take that money and spend it for 6 months extension of the highway program. That is, your stamp money goes to highways. That's nuts. It's a non-starter. There's ways to fix the post office. That's a way to destroy the post office. We need stable funding that relates back to transportation. As you said, haven't raised the gas tax since 1994. You paid $1.29 a gallon, 18.4 cents to the federal government. Today I'm paying $4 a gallon, 18.4 cents to the federal government. Construction cost inflation is up. We've got 40 million more people in the country driving cars. We got more truck traffic. We need to get serious about fixing this with a long-term solution.
But people don't like raising taxes, Congressman. There's another proposal out there. Let me ask you about. There is an enormous pile of American multinational corporate profits stashed abroad because people don't want to pay U.S. taxes on them. Another proposal, Rand Paul looks like he's interested in it. Harry Reid looks like he's interested. Give those corporations a tax holiday, a huge tax break to bring that money home, but on the money that you make, put it towards transportation, roads and bridges, and get a fix that way.
The last time they get a tax holiday from overseas, they gave the money as bonuses and bought back stock to enrich themselves. This time won't be any different. That's a phony solution. And besides that, it's not going to happen by August 1st. That's for darn sure. It would be a bad deal for the American public. Look, if we tax the oil companies, they aren't going to be able to pass through every penny. Now, people say, oh, they'll just pass through your barrel tax. Well, that's interesting. The oil companies are fine with raising the gas tax. They're fine with repatriation, but they're going nuts over the idea of a barrel tax because they know they might not be able to pass on every penny of that tax to the consumers. This would be a way both to have the oil companies, OPEC and others, pay a little bit of a share of our transportation needs and to get stable funding.
So how much per barrel of oil, and what would that produce in revenue compared to what this country needs to stay on top of its infrastructure needs?
We would do start with $6.75 a barrel. We'd index it for construction cost inflation, fleet fuel economy. It would, over the term of a six-year bill, produce about $120 billion more than we would produce with the current gas tax.
What are you projecting that would mean in terms of cost per gallon for American consumers at the pump?
Well, if they could pass through every penny, which I don't think they can, the first year, and if they would pass through savings, the first year the price would go down by about 1.4 cents. Next year would be even. Third year, you'd be up 1.7 cents or so at the gallon if they could pass it through, and then it would index up from there. So, you know, when I drive to work in the morning and I turn around, drive back at night, I notice the price has gone up 25 cents because of speculators on Wall Street or prices somewhere. Even if they could pass through that 1.7 cents 3 years from now, I don't think many Americans would be particularly upset about paying 1.7 cents more in order to see their roads, bridges, and highways repaired and a million or so people put to work.
There's a lot of talk, Congressman, that there may be no solution to this, that we'll just have gridlock and highway bridge construction will just shut down this summer. What are the implications of that? What are we looking at in terms of American infrastructure needs that would be or are unaddressed?
We have 140,000 bridges on the national system that need repair or total replacement. 40% of the highway service is so deteriorated you have to rebuild the roadbed, not just resurface it. And we have a $70 billion backlog on transit systems that's so bad that in places like D.C. they've actually killed people because of outmoded systems. So if we made these investments, you could put a lot of people to work in manufacturing, design, engineering, and construction, and begin to rebuild the legacy that Dwight David Eisenhower gave us, and even Ronald Reagan gave us, because he's the one who started spending trust fund money on transit systems because a lot of people live in the cities and need alternatives. We cannot walk away from this. Every competitor nation around the world is spending a huge amount to invest in moving people, goods more efficiently, competing in the world economy. We can't drop to the back of the pack.
Are we borrowing against the future, Congressman, by not taking care of this stuff now?
Worse than that, when you reach a certain point of failure, bridges go to total failure, roadbeds go to total failure. Every year we delay the cost of fixing our system and just bringing it up to good repair, not building a 21st century system, but fixing the 20th century system gets much, much more expensive.
Congressman Peter DeFazio from the 4th District in Oregon, joining us from Eugene, Oregon today. Congressman, good luck. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
Let's go to Washington, where this is all on the table. It plays out in all 50 states right on the highway that you may be on now. But Washington will decide what to do about the, well, essentially running out of cash that's happening right now at the Highway Trust Fund, the federal kitty here. Robert Puentes joins us, senior fellow with the Brookings Institution's Metropolitan Policy Program, directs the Metropolitan Infrastructure Initiative. Robert Puentes, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me again.
Why are we running out of cash, out of money, nearly, in this account this summer?
Well, the basic problem is that the money that's coming into this Federal Transportation Trust Fund is not sufficient to cover the authorizations from Congress for the money that's going out. So it needs about $15 billion to stay afloat through the end of the fiscal year. That's the money that we're looking at now just to deal with this immediate problem. The fund is largely supported by a tax on gasoline with some other kind of truck fees and other things that are in there. Mm-hmm. And for decades, that worked the way that it was supposed to. The nation was expanding. We built out the interstates. Americans drove more and more and more. But everything is very different now. So we don't want to go back to what we did before. We haven't raised the gas tax in two decades, even to keep pace with inflation. Americans are driving much less. The amount of driving per person has dropped for the ninth straight year. So it's a major shift in just how Americans are traveling. And when we do drive, we're driving much more fuel-efficient vehicles. The new fleet is more fuel-efficient than ever. So the entire system that we've built to support this program, which is, you know, a quarter of a trillion dollars, it's not an insignificant amount of money, just needs to be rethought. This isn't just a blip on the radar. We're going through a transition now. We've got to figure out what the purpose of this program is going to be for the long-term future of this country.
What are the roles of federal spending versus state spending here? What does the federal fund back up? Because everything happens at the state level. Obviously, by definition, it's on somebody's state turf. What does the federal government pay for? What do states pay for? How do they divide the cost of keeping up our highway bridge infrastructure?
Yeah, I think we overemphasize the federal role in a lot of ways. It's certainly significant, but even for transportation, which is largely supported by a lot of public funds, it's only about a quarter, 30% of the money that's spent on the surface transportation system throughout the country. It's significant. Again, a quarter of $1 trillion. It certainly matters, and the states will be hurt if we have these problems with the trust fund at the end of the summer. But we overemphasize what the federal government should be doing. So while all this transition is happening here in Washington, while we're experiencing drift and dysfunction, and I applaud the congressman for trying to come up with some solutions, but we see states, cities, metropolitan areas, public, private, philanthropic leaders all across this country recognizing they've got to step up. And we see innovative solutions happening literally all across the country.
And, of course, it's a jobs issue as well. I'm reading here, by some estimate, 700,000 jobs out the window if these projects stop.
Yeah, we've looked at this recently, some work we did here at Brookings, and found that 12% of U.S. jobs are directly related to infrastructure broadly, not just transport, but water, energy, everything else. But 12% is an awful lot of people that are employed by this. And what we saw, you know, just before the recession, construction jobs kind of fell off the table. And this, by having a robust program with a federal, state, local partnership, we really can put Americans to work. And to rebuild our economy for the long haul.
Do we have an infrastructure crisis? I'm looking at Society of Civil Engineers gives us a D+. Rankings that put us down at number 9 or number 20 globally. Travel abroad and you see some pretty shiny new stuff compared to what you see in a lot of American locales. Do we have a problem, a crisis?
Well, look, clearly we have a problem just because the investments in the infrastructure that exists today is just reaching the end of its useful life. And we do a great job in this country. And for decades, we've done a great job in building new stuff. But we got to fix it. It's got to be rehabilitated. It's got to be maintained. And safety absolutely has to be paramount. So we've got to make sure that it's safe. We've got to make sure that it's functioning. And then we can think about building new stuff.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American highway, road, and bridge funding running on empty in this country. Infrastructure in trouble, and nobody sure how we will pay for a fix. Robert Puentes is with us from the Brookings Institution's Metropolitan Infrastructure Initiative. Here was the President Obama in May at the Tappan Zee Bridge, Hudson River in Tarrytown, New York, building a new one there. After you cracks, you could see right through, calling there for billions in transportation funding, stressing the need for newer, better American infrastructure.
We've got ports that aren't ready for the next generation of cargo ships. We've got more than 100,000 bridges that are old enough to qualify for Medicare. We've got leaky pipes that lose billions of gallons of drinking water every single day, even as we've got a severe drought in much of the West. Nearly half our people don't have access to transit at all, and I don't have to tell you what some of our airports look like. Building a world-class transportation system is one of the reasons America became an economic superpower in the first place.
President Obama talking there at a bridge being rebuilt, but many will not if the funding runs out this summer and nobody knows how that's going to keep on going. 100,000 bridges old enough for Medicare. Janice in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Thanks for calling, Janice. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I am so frustrated. I'm on the Minnesota-Wisconsin border.
Yep.
They're building a multi-million dollar Interstate I-90 bridge across the Mississippi River. It's a mess. Everything up to it and on the other side of it, you can hardly go there. The roads are in such disrepair. The exits are all potholed. I've called them, fill the stinking potholes. Oh, well, you know, we'll get to that. No, it's just it's horrible. Our city streets of La Crosse can't get them paved in the city. It's like, stop this.
So how should we pay for the federal? How should we pay for the federal part of it, Janice? What if the gas tax went up? Would that drive you crazy, or is there a better way?
Let the go up with the gas tax. I'm fine. And private industry, get me private, because these doggone state people stand around like, duh, you know, and we're paying them big time. Come on. Get the private industry in here, give them some competition, and get the job done.
Janice, I appreciate your call. A lot of people would like to see the job done. Jerry in Menasha, Wisconsin. Jerry, you're on.
Well, I think the obvious answer for funding to this whole issue is to remove the gas and oil subsidies, the taxpayer-funded gas and oil subsidies. This is just out. Those are outrageous. Those are billionaire corporations, and they have so much money they don't know what to do with it, and to support them further is ridiculous. Just get that money into our infrastructure. The few bridges that have been built in this area, and we're talking about Green Bay, Appleton, recently have had to be re-repaired because they're going for the lowest possible company to create these or to build these bridges.
Yep.
And 3 and 4 years later, they have to be repaired. We need a really strong movement throughout this country to insist on improving our infrastructure, and we'll just take it away from those. The money will come from
the oil companies' subsidies. Jerry, we've got it. I appreciate your call very much. You're paying attention. A lot of people are. Robert Puentes, I want to look at the different options here, but let me ask you a fundamental question. Can this country afford its own infrastructure?
Absolutely, we can afford.
Well, then why aren't we keeping it up? And we know it's important for competitiveness. We know it's important in our everyday lives. I'm looking at numbers here that saying just individual car repairs from pothole messes and all the rest come to $400+ a year for Americans. Mm-hmm. Why aren't we keeping up if it's within our economic wingspan?
Because of this transition that we have right now, for a long time, we fundamentally understood this connection between these kinds of investments and the economic health of this country, whether it was the interstates, whether it was the canals that connected the country, whether it was the railroads. There was a firm connection between these investments and the economy. We've kind of lost that a little bit. And it's not necessarily a bad thing because I think there is this economic transition that's happening now. We've got to reinforce that fundamental connection if it's about connecting people to jobs, if it's about making sure that we're connecting people to the opportunities that they need, if it's about rebuilding our metropolitan areas. These are economic propositions. We've got to make the infrastructure programs then derivative of that. That's what we've gotten away from.
Let me ask you about the options on the table then. John Boehner's talking and others talking about end Saturday delivery of the U.S. mail and take it out of the post office kitty. They got problems of their own, but he would get a short-term fix right there. Good idea or not?
Well, I don't know. I don't think so. I think that we need, for the reasons that the congressman said, we need to stop thinking about the short-term fixes here. We've got to think about long-term systemic kind of changes that we need. And the gas tax is the one thing that's there. I mean, it's cheap to collect. It's thrown off a lot of revenue for a long time. If we actually raise that and then connect it to how we rethink this program and make sure that we're spending the money the right way, as Janice and the caller said, fixing the existing infrastructure, then we'll actually have more bang for the buck. But
okay,
we got to transition to something long-term because
What about Jerry's proposal then? And it kind of dovetails with the Congressman DeFazio's. He would do it differently. She says end the subsidies, take that money. He says put a barrel tax per barrel on oil. Oil companies would pay it. It's less obvious and politically difficult than a gas tax, which goes straight to the consumer. What about that as an answer?
That is another answer. And I think that your point is exactly right, that it is kind of hiding it a little bit. It's not as direct. I mean, look, we have gas prices, as the congressman said, that are put in big numbers, 3 foot high on every street corner in the country. So people are very attuned to that. If it can be kind of hidden a little bit or kind of go after the wholesalers directly, that's a different way to get at it.
What about waiving a whole pile of corporate profits that are now stashed abroad? American corporations, multinationals are keeping there because they don't want to pay U.S. taxes on them. They've been given a tax holiday in the past, and they're hoping for that again where they can shovel that back home at a very low tax rate, like an extraordinarily low. But the proposal is that little bit of taxes, way short of the formal level on those, would be used for highway infrastructure. Is that a good idea?
Well, there's a lot of money that's sloshing around over there. And so by bringing it back, we can directly connect that with U.S. infrastructure investments. I don't think it's really a solution necessarily, again, to plug in the short-term problem. We can use some of that repatriated money to stand up something like an infrastructure bank, for example, or something that is much more targeted to the investments, particularly that the business community is looking for. It's one idea, but again, it's not going to solve the challenges the way that a gas tax increase will, which is really the workhorse.
And people are saying it would actually cost the U.S. government a lot of money over time because they'd be bringing those profits home at a very, very discounted tax rate just to get some cash to get some pavement on the roads.
Yeah, look, there's lots of reasons for trying to do that, to try to bring some of that money back here. And then this is the one issue that's on the table right now. So that's why it's being targeted.
Jeff in Providence, Rhode Island. Jeff, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi there. Multifaceted issue, obviously, but multifaceted solutions. Get rid of the subsidies. Charge more in gasoline and oil taxes. To cover the back-end costs, whether it's our infrastructure or environmental impact, be more like Europe and the rest of the world, which has been paying its real costs for fuel, certainly ever since World War II. It's the reason why they've been driving small cars with small engines, and we have totally ignored, possibly in that American exceptionalist way, the fact that resources have costs and limits.
Jeff, point taken. Though, as Robert and others point out, our cars are getting more fuel efficient. Now, that's part of the problem with the gas tax. We're not putting as much gas in, so we're not buying as much, so there's not as much flowing into the trust fund here, the kitty. You're calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Let's hear from somebody who's grappling with what's unfolding right now, with this money coming to an end this summer. Michael Lewis joins us from Providence, director of the Rhode Island Department of Transportation. Mr. Lewis, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Great to be with you.
You've got the geographically great state, the smallest state in the country. Is it a problem for you if the federal highway trust fund money shuts down, gets cut off?
Well, it's a big problem. We're already experiencing it. Rhode Island, the average across the country for transportation infrastructure, highways and bridges particularly, is each of the states relies on average on about 50% of their program coming from the Highway Trust Fund. So that's from federal gas tax. In Rhode Island, along with many of the smaller states, smaller population states, the percentage is quite a bit higher. We're up closer to the 80% level. So any impact, any delay in the Highway Trust Fund coming to Rhode Island is going to have an immediate negative impact on our efforts to improve infrastructure here in the state.
So if it runs out, if the money runs out in July or August or soon, how does it flow through? Do you stop 80% of your projects? Do you stop all of them because the money is all over the place or what?
Yeah, we actually saw this coming last fall and started to take action because we started to delay the advertising of new projects because we had to reserve 2014 money that we knew we were having because of our existing obligations in 2015. We have debt service on projects that we used grant anticipation notes, pledging future federal revenue for projects that have been done over the last decade. We also have long-term projects that are ongoing where we need 2015 obligations and beyond to cover those projects. So we had to hold back on 2014 projects, not knowing what Congress is going to do. We started to advertise the project, but now we're putting a hold on the awarding of those projects until we know this has been resolved by Congress.
Mike Lewis, you're sort of a microcosm of what's going on all over the country. Give us some concrete examples, of highways or bridges in trouble that really need that attention now and may not get it. What are you up against? What kind of problems?
One of your previous callers, I think, called in from Providence, Jeff. He's probably familiar with a couple of projects specifically in Rhode Island that are being on hold, and they're two very important bridge projects. One's on the East Shore Expressway. We call them McCormick Quarry Bridges in East Providence. It's a $15 million project. We actually had to close the bridge down temporarily last week because it's held up with temporary shoring. It's been that way for years because of the deterioration of the bridge, and a vehicle hit the temporary shoring last week and put the bridge in danger. That's on the schedule to be replaced, and we can't award the project until this issue is resolved. There's another one in Narragansett.
I mean, we saw a version of that outside Seattle last year, right, where they hit and down went a span of the bridge, and two or three cars went in after it, just shut down I-5.
That's exactly right. Now, I-5 is probably a bigger issue than we have here, but from a local level, that's a very important link. It's a link to the East Bay, it's a link to the towns of Barrington and Warren and Bristol, very important connection up to the Providence and the capital city. There's another bridge called the Great Island Bridge down in Narragansett. It's about a $10 million bridge that needs to be replaced, and it's the sole access point to a significant neighborhood, and it's in a part of the evacuation route in case of a hurricane. So these are things that are pieces of infrastructure that are critical, they're vital to the economy, they're vital to the quality of life, and they are directly being impacted by the delay in Congress acting to address the Highway Trust Fund shortfall.
Robert Puentes, I'm reading here in Equipment World. Now, these guys make road building equipment, so they have a big interest in it. But Kirk Landers, he's looking down toward Brazil, and we've seen these terrible traffic jams for years around Sao Paulo. And he writes, letting infrastructure decay is seductively easy for a society that refuses to face challenges. Roads and sewers and power grids don't turn to dust in a year or two. They corrode gradually over decades, each year of inaction, easy to rationalize, until at some point the decay is so severe you face monumental rebuilding challenges requiring funds no longer generated by your economy. Is it that bad, Robert Puentes? Are we on that path?
It's not that bad. It's not as bad as it is in Sao Paulo, for sure. They're experiencing global urbanization or urbanization trends that are on a totally different scale than we have here. We are a developed country.
Yep.
What we need to do now is to reinvest in the existing system and make sure what we've already built over the last 50, 60 years is up to the challenges that we have for the next American economy, and that we're investing in the right places. So we've got to think about, you know, where we're going to get the money, as this conversation is saying, but what we're going to do with it, which is to reinvest in the existing system, and then where to do it. And we've got to invest in our cities and our metropolitan areas that are the engines of our economy.
Mike Lewis, when do the bulldozers stop if the money's not on its way? Do you have to start shutting down projects with you and others around the country?
They're slowing down now. I mean, you know, one of the things that, you know, our system has been used to long-term federal programs, 5 and 6 year duration. So the industry could predict when the projects were going to come out, how long they were going to be available, and they could plan both equipment purchases and staffing resources based on a long-term projection. What we're going, you know, month to month, year to year now, it's very difficult for construction industry to invest in jobs and equipment based on this uncertainty. And that's one of the negative impacts of this lack of decision-making that we have right now. And I think your previous commenter, I would just like to add to that. We, over the last 50 years, we've become so, we've taken our system of transportation for granted, just like we do our lights and our water systems in our homes. It's always there for us. We don't remember a time when the interstate highway system wasn't here.
Yeah.
And we take it for granted. And it's all reaching the end of its service life, and it needs the kinds of rehabilitation and repair that any built part of our infrastructure needs, whether it's our homes or our cities, and we need to invest in it going forward.
We're going to hear
that investment.
We're going to hear in just a minute from somebody who says, well, let the states handle it. Get the federal government out of it. Let each state stand on its own bottom, kind of, when it comes to roads and
bridges. I'd love to comment on that.
Yes, please.
Well, there, as I said, 50% of our investment comes from the federal government. We've been used to that. And many states, they already raise a lot of revenues to go into transportation, and they're able to match a lot of the program that comes from the federal government. But there are many parts of this country, this transportation system that links cities together that are very costly, and the states don't have the revenues to invest in that. Take Wyoming, for example. The interstates that run through Wyoming are critical, bringing goods in from the port of Long Beach and getting to the east,
sure,
and to the Midwest. Wyoming can't afford to invest in that interstate.
Small population, huge state.
Exactly, and solely for Wyoming's benefit. It needs the rest of the country to invest in that interstate for it. Rhode Island, I-95 runs right through Rhode Island. Rhode Island's a small state. Boston, New York, Washington corridor, all of New England states and on into eastern Canada, dependent on the I-95 corridor. You know, we have 220,000 vehicles running through Providence, Rhode Island every day on I-95. Those people aren't stopping in Providence.
So if you could wag the dog from Little Rhode Island, how would you refill the kitty? Higher gas tax, barrel tax on oil, stop Saturday delivery of U.S. mail, you know, give a break to corporations to bring offshore profits home? What would you do?
First, on the positive note, we're talking about it. People are actually engaged. Congress,
yep,
is engaged. They recognize that something needs to be done here. There's also a pretty strong view. The gas tax has worked very well for us for the last 50 years. It's probably the easiest from a technological point,
mm-hmm,
to address our shortfall. But there's also concern, and you've been raised earlier on your program, that as fuel efficiency standards become better. People are shifting modes. They're using mass transit. It's not a sustainable, long-term sustainable source of revenue.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are talking this hour about American highway, road, and bridge funding running on empty infrastructure in trouble, and nobody sure how we will pay for a fix. The National Highway Trust Fund, it'll be on fumes later this summer. Congress has not found a way, though there are many proposals floating around, to put more gas, more money in the tank there, and we may see a lot of needed repairs and maintenance. New building just going undone. Robert Puentes is with us from the Metropolitan Infrastructure Initiative at the Brookings Institution in Washington. Michael Lewis is with us, director of the Rhode Island Department of Transportation. Little state, but a lot of people drive through it. A lot of people drive in it. They, like others, watching this very closely. We'll hear for a state should pay proponent in just a second. Lots of feedback online here. Daphne says no need to raise taxes. Just stop all the loopholes for the rich. Well, maybe. On let the states pay here. Chris says, let blue states repair their roads since they're more wealthy and pay more taxes, support government, don't complain about taxes. Red states can use dirt roads. I don't know how that's going to work on your next cross-country trip, Chris.
Tom, can I jump on that?
Yeah.
This is Mike again in Rhode Island. I think, you know, that's an interesting point. And I think there are, you know, there are certain states, certain large, you know, municipal areas that could do very well on their own. But the problem is, I have this fear that that's going to lead of islands of haves in a sea of have-nots across the country. You know, it matters very much to Florida, to the citrus growers in Florida, what the condition of the roads are in Arkansas and Nebraska as they try to deliver orange juice to Seattle. So, you know, there could be very good infrastructure facilities based on local decisions that don't work for the national transportation system as a whole. And I think the states are stepping up. The states around the country have taken initiatives. Rhode Island just recently, over the weekend, to try to invest more at a local level. But there remains a need for a national perspective, a national funding.
I think Americans would be pretty shocked.
Roadways.
Yeah, if they ran on a nice road in one state and across the border and you're on our listener Chris's dirt road in the next, I mean, maybe it wouldn't come to that. We'll hear in just a moment from a proponent of states picking up more responsibility. Michael Lewis, Robert Puentes, let me get some callers right here. Benjamin, Des Moines, Iowa. Benjamin, you're on the air. What do you think? What do you see?
Hi, Tom. Very important topic. I think we really do need the infrastructure spending. Out here in the flyover country, we're a little disappointed. The last time the Obama administration and Congress had the opportunity to fix the problem with the $800 billion stimulus spending bill, a lot of that was to have gone to so-called shovel-ready jobs. Didn't happen. You know, it was basically a payoff to the union. So we're a little skeptical. I'm going to hang up and listen to your response. Thanks, Tom.
I appreciate your call. Not flyover country to me, Benjamin, by any means. But Robert Puentes, what about it? Shovel ready and rebuild infrastructure was the call. And then the stimulus kind of came and went. And a lot of people looked around and said, hey, where's all that stuff we were going to build and take care of?
Well, this is the point. I mean, we forget we were on the economic precipice. We were hemorrhaging jobs. And so...
So what? It was supposed to create infrastructure, that stimulus. Where is it?
Well, this is the thing. So we needed – so it was shovel-ready jobs. The money had to be spent and the projects had to be done quickly, right? But because it takes a long time to do some of the new stuff and some of the new – you know, the clean, green recovery and all those things that kind of predated the election, when it came down to it, this was about, well, what's shovel-ready? It was filling potholes. It was painting bridges. It was doing those repairs that we've neglected for so long. So, you know, it may not have – and people may not have realized what we got out of that, but there was an awful lot of rehab and a lot of investment back into the existing system. Not the sexy stuff, you know. I mean, we got a lot of, you know, high-speed rail was a big part of the debate too, you know, and that had a big kind of political mess around it. But the stuff that had to be done is what got funded through the stimulus.
Let me get another call on that front, I think. Al in Watertown, Tennessee. Al, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Tom. I think it's appropriate that the state of Rhode Island is having a voice in this because they don't have a history of managing public money well, and that gets to my point. We've misdefined the problem today. So far, we're talking about a funding problem, but I'll give you three examples of why it's not a funding problem.
Okay.
The Airport and Airways Trust Fund, the Social Security Trust Fund, the Highway Trust Fund. What do these funds have in common? They have money that has been spent in those funds on things other than their charter. So the idea that we can just keep pouring money into these funds and get a different solution is not correct.
Let me look at that, Al. I appreciate that. Robert Puentes, is that the case with the Highway Trust Fund? Are we spending that money on, I don't know, ticker tape parades or something else, not infrastructure?
No, unfortunately, it's the other way around. For a long time in this country, as Americans drove more and they paid more in the gas tax, it threw off a lot of money that went into this transportation trust fund. And the idea was really to firewall that money, to keep it protected, so it wasn't going for things like deficit reduction, which we did in 1990 and then again in 1993. So, but now it's been flipped. And we have injected almost $70 billion in general fund revenue, basically debt, that's gone in to support this transportation trust fund because the gasoline tax is not throwing off enough revenue. So unfortunately, it's the opposite.
Because we're not figuring out a way to make it tenable long term. Ken in Boston, you're on the air, Ken.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. A couple points. The first one is, if we're looking for a place to spend money and there's a bit of money left on the table, I'm a big advocate of traffic circles, rotaries, roundabouts, whatever you want to call them.
Yep.
I spend a lot of time overseas, and they're not something that need reinventing. It's something we don't need to apply American exceptionalism to do. We just need to do them here.
Compare for us, if you've spent a lot of time overseas, Ken, quality of infrastructure wherever you're traveling versus here. Is it in developed countries, Europe? What do you see?
I've traveled across Europe. I'm married to a Romanian, so I've seen the roads in the Eastern Europe, and I've seen the roads in Western Europe. We're simply not spending the money on infrastructure that we need to be. I witnessed France revolutionize its local traffic network with the traffic circles, so it's a big proponent, but generally we're not spending the money. It's not a question of the climate. Boston's got a hard climate, but so does much of Europe. There's a lot of salt that goes down the roads in Europe, a lot of freeze-thaw cycles. We're just not interested in spending the money.
Ken, I appreciate your call as well. Our time's growing short here, but you travel and compare, and it can be hard on your American sense of self-esteem, even confidence. Richard in East Lansing, Michigan. Richard, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I've got two sources of revenue for you.
Great.
First, according to Harper's Index, the index in Harper's Magazine, several years ago, they published the fact that the value of the Bush tax cuts is equal to the total cost of total infrastructure repair in this country.
Okay. So just bring those back. What about all that super economic growth we got out of those tax cuts?
Well, I don't know anything about that. I'm just suggesting
okay.
revenue sources.
Okay.
Another one would be a 1 cent fee on every trading transaction, stocks, bonds, commodities, whatever. With high-speed computer trading, there's thousands of transactions per second conducted. Anybody who's unwilling to pay a 1 cent fee, I mean, even on a $10 trade, a 1 cent fee?
Yeah.
How could you complain about that?
Richard, you've got a creative mind. We need to send you to Congress and get something done there. There's a couple more to put on the griddle here. Emily Goff joins us right now from Washington, policy analyst on transportation and infrastructure at the Heritage Foundation. Emily, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here.
If I've got it right, you say turn more of this spending and responsibility back to the states. Why and how?
Absolutely. I mean, if we look at the way, I think the conversation here really needs to be about how is Congress spending the money it's collecting from the states right now? First, it needs to be looking at that. And if you do, you see how patently unfair it is to the motorists, the car, and the truck drivers that are paying the gas taxes that fund the system.
Why is that? Where's the unfairness?
About 25% or more of those gas tax revenues annually get skimmed off the top and go to non-road, non-bridge projects that don't benefit them, that don't reduce traffic congestion or enhance their mobility. They're going to subway systems.
Oh, you're saying not for roads, but for other kinds of public transportation.
They're going to things like the New York subway system, to nature trails in Virginia, bicycle paths in Oregon. And the thing here is these activities are not inherently bad. They have value. They have tremendous value at a local level, but they're not federal priorities. And so if we're asking what Congress should do, what the federal role should be, we have to take a look at those priorities and re-examine them.
So would you say let every state sit on its own bottom here, be responsible for its own roads?
Not 100%. I think there is a limited federal role in infrastructure. It's certainly not at the scale we see now. And so if we transition to that situation, sure, there'll be some short-term issues to work out. So Mr. Lewis from Rhode Island, I completely agree that there would be a conversation needed to be had about how does Rhode Island deal with this. But one thing we can say is that the federal government is restricting the state's abilities, Rhode Island included, to raise revenue. There's the ban on the interstate. There's a ban on tolling of the interstate highway system. There's federal restrictions that prevent some of the states from engaging in what are called public-private partnerships. So there are things that Congress can do to give the states more flexibility and leeway, which would, I think, help alleviate some of those transition costs to a new paradigm.
Let me look at a couple of those things. Robert Puentes, what about this notion of 25% of the Highway Trust Fund funds being skimmed off, Emily's phrase, for subways, public transportation, bike paths in Portland, Oregon?
Yeah, this is something we've talked about for a bit, but I think there's a change that's going on now, and it's a little bit of old way of thinking. So the new way of thinking and what we've got from most recently from the Department of Transportation chief in Texas. Texas, not a place you'd think that would be, you know, kind of a road building state historically. Yep. But he has come out and he said, look, we're not the Department of Transportation anymore. We're the Department of Multimodal. I mean, they're doing lots of different ways to move people.
In other words, not just roads and bridges.
Highways, mm-hmm. Right, not just roads and bridges. So it's a system of systems. All these things are supposed to work together. And, you know, this idea that we've had a user fee, you know, held water for a long time. You're paying a gas tax that was going back in the system. But the billions of dollars that we've injected from the general fund into the transportation trust fund kind of shoots holes in the
Is it wrong for Arkansas to help pay for a subway system in a major city somewhere else?
This is what we've gotten away from. I think in 1956, we were able to convince folks in New Jersey, for example, that an interstate system mattered and some of their revenue was going to support interstate building in Montana, for example. So that's what we need to get back to. So what is the proposition today? And I completely agree with what Emily said. What is the federal role? We've got to figure out what the federal program should be doing, and then we need to target resources to do that. Freight is a great example. Michael said this as well, that we're one of the only industrialized countries on the planet that doesn't have a comprehensive freight program. It's a huge country. It's all continents. So let's figure out what then the federal role should be in that and target resources for things like global goods movement.
Michael Lewis, what about tolls, more tolls on highways and private-public partnerships? I don't know what that means. Maybe private highways.
Yeah. No, I think both of those are good suggestions, but I think they're certainly not answers to the entire problem. We in Rhode Island recently have gone through a bit of a patch with attempting to toll. It was a lot of local opposition on, and the legislature most recently decided to abandon the tolls. I-95 could have been an option here for Rhode Island. 95 is largely tolled throughout the eastern seaboard from Maine down to Florida. Some states not so much. So that's a possibility, but it's not a solution for the entire country. The volumes in most of the the rural parts of the country just would not support a tolling system. You wouldn't get the kind of revenues you needed, and that was studied back in the 30s and 40s when the interstate highway system was first being planned.
Yeah.
That was a suggestion at the time, and it was determined that tolling would not support the kind of investment that was needed.
Emily, what about that? And what about, Michael Lewis expressed a bigger concern that if we go to state-by-state funding of our highway and bridge system, we'll have and have not kind of highways around the country, a patchwork of qualities that could vary pretty widely.
We can't assume that if we move to this new paradigm, this new situation where the states have a greater role and the federal role is decreased, we can't assume that states are going to keep pursuing the same projects they're pursuing now. I think that their calculus will change. They might in the world of transit, right? There's a huge deficit that Congressman DeFazio mentioned. I think in terms of transit, states will start looking at cheaper options such as buses as opposed to really expensive subway systems. So that calculus will change. They probably would be able to afford them more so than they can afford the current systems they have in place. The problem with the federal role is that you have, when federal dollars are involved, you have tremendous project delays because of the environmental reviews involved and other federal mandates that drive up project costs and lead to lengthy delays. And this shortchanges the states. Their dollars don't stretch as far. So if we were to shift over to give them more control over their transportation funding and financing decisions, I think that they could do build more with less money and have projects delivered on time and on budget.
If the net result of that was fewer environmental controls and therefore a deteriorating environment, is that a net gain?
I take the approach that humans are not necessarily the problem. I think that
the problem
private
in
ownership
what?
when it comes to the environment. So I see a lot of flaws in
what is it, bobcats or rabbits? What's the problem then?
I think that humans can be part of the solution. And so I don't think that the current federal approach, this very top-down, one-size-fits-all to regulating behavior to save the environment, is actually getting us anywhere. You see this with transit. Tons of money, gas taxes included, have been funneled into transit. But the CO2 emissions that we've seen in our environment could be attributed to stricter fuel efficiencies in cars. So we're kind of a victim of our own success. I think a good victim in that way. I would rather see the states and private individuals that have a vested interest in protecting their property, their environments, be more part of the solution rather than a one-size-fits-all top-down approach.
If we went state level, Robert Puentes, would we see lower environmental control, a worse environment?
We've seen that there's certainly a streamlining challenge that we have here on the federal level. It does take a long time to get through the process.
Yep.
And so that is an area where we really – you don't even have to worry about what Congress is doing. And the administration can take a leadership here, continue to do that. They just need to figure out what are the priorities and how do we get things through faster without mitigating – without losing some of the reasons we have some of the environmental and some of the other reviews.
What do you think is going to happen here? We don't have much time now before this kitty is pretty much empty. And lots of proposals, but not a majority for any of them. What's likely here?
I think we'll probably figure out a way to patch it, but at the end of the fiscal year, because again, the states are going to get hurt, and there are two senators in every state, and so they're hearing this now. I think we'll figure out a way that we'll ameliorate the problem in the short term. But look, I could not tell you what's going to happen in the long term.
A patch again. Michael Lewis, can we just keep patching and have a, 21st century country to move around in?
I think we'll have a patched country to move around in. And I think that, the good news is they are talking about it. They're discussing it. There's a greater awareness of the importance of investment in transportation, not only for moving people, but for moving goods as well. I remain confident that we'll come up with a solution, but everybody has to stay on point, Tom.
Well, we're for that. Michael Lewis, Director of the Rhode Island Department of Transportation, thanks for joining us today.
Pleasure.
Emily Goff, we hear you. Take it to the States. Appreciate you joining us from the Heritage Foundation, Emily.
Thank you.
And Robert Puentes at the Brookings Institution, thank you so much for joining us again, Robert.
Thank you. It was a great discussion.
Listeners, good luck with your driving this summer. And to all of us on the roads out there, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.